Welcome to today's webinar, and really excited about what we're sharing today. We're looking at hiring and looking at the hiring masters, we're calling it. So we're hanging out with a couple of legends who have got pretty damn good at hiring. Before we jump in, team, I'd love to know that everyone can see me, hear me, see the screen, the tech's all good. So if that's all good, please just jump into the chat and say all good. Just put all good in there so we know that we're all good. That would be fantastic. Now, for some reason, Toby, I can't see those chats. Yeah, man, it's not opening up for some reason. But everyone's all good. Yep. Yeah, there we go. We're all good. Sweet. Cool. Nice team. Hey, Alex. Hey, Courtney. Hey, Colin. Hey, Phil. How you doing, man? Hey, Mike. G'day, Kelvin. All righty. Nice. Hey, Ants. How you doing, my man? Ollie Pengelly. Loved your win the other day, mate. That was magic. Love reading that. Okay. Let's jump in then. Let's get into it. So, hiring, team, super important area. I'm going to say something straight at the start. The results, and this may seem a bit tough, but I think it's important. The results you get with building your team and your hiring is directly related to you. If you hold up a mirror, that's the the most important person to work on when we're thinking about hiring, because it's an absolutely critical part of your business. It's how you multiply yourself. It's how you create leverage. It's how you build a business. So if you want better results in business, it's critical that you get really, really good at hiring and identifying talent and attracting people to work in your business. So I find it's not much help to say there's no good people out there. If that's sometimes the mindset we have, then that's a problem that we have that we're going to need to work on. Other people can find them, so it's super important that we're the change we want to see in the world. So if we want some change in the type of people we're attracting and recruiting and getting into our business, it really starts with us, starts and stops with us, actually. You need to be really above the line with this stuff. So just to kick off, I'd love to get a feel from you all. Just give yourself a rating on the hiring front. You know, in terms of your ability to hire, attract, and recruit and identify the best people, how would you rate yourself? Now, I want you to give you the traffic light system. Green would be expert, amber would be okay, and red would be a beginner. Just put that in the chat box. How would you rate yourself in terms of your ability to hire? Green is expert, amber is kind of learning, okay, and red is beginner. Let's just see where people feel like they're at. All right, Toby, I am having a lot of difficulty seeing the chat, mate. Here we go. Right, we're all good now. Got it. For some reason it is liking to hide. Okay, so John, Amber. Michelle, 4 out of 10. Phil, yellow. Jock, amber. Ants, red. Progress starts with the truth, so it's good to be honest where you're at. Logan, red. Anne-Marie, red. Amber. Simon, amber. Lots of Michelle, amberish. Lots of ambers. Okay. So I think that's what we're here to do today, is to take red, to turn it to amber, to take amber, to turn it to green. Sweet. Okay, so I guess the problem if you don't have a great system for hiring and you're good at hiring, you are going to be disappointed with the people you get, and that's going to grate on you. You're going to feel like you're flying solo, that everything revolves on you, that you've got to keep all the plates spinning, and at the end of the day, you're going to feel worn out and exasperated and ground down by the process of carrying all the weight in your business on your shoulders. So getting the right people, you know, is super, super important. Opportunity, if you get this right, if you've got a great system, you'll have confidence in the people that you've got on board, which is massively important. You'll be set up to grow. So to grow a business, we need more people. If you want to improve sales and profit, the people we have are our factory. So if we have more good people, we can do more work, and presuming we're getting the pricing right, we can make more profit in free time. So eventually, if we want to be able to generate income and take holidays while we're generating income, which is the goal of everyone in business, we're going to need great people, and that key building block, along with the right systems, to creating free time, family time, and time to do the things you want to do, to have some choice around how you, live life. So that's really the background, if you like. So today I've got a couple of really really cool cats that we're hanging out with. So Jason and Kerry. So just unmute you guys. There we go.
Hey Tony.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Good.
It's good. Good to hang out.
Yep, definitely.
Gary Penn, how are you, mate?
Good, mate, good.
It's good. There we go. That's probably a good view. So, team, really appreciate you guys hanging out today. So what we're going to do today, team, we've got a bunch of questions we're going to go through about hiring. And Jason and Kerry are going to share their experience along with myself. You're welcome to ask questions as we go through. I think that would be really helpful. You guys are all good with that?
Yep.
Sweet. So let's just jump in. I guess the first thing is, it'd be great if you maybe start with you, Jason, if you can just introduce yourself and describe your business, so type of work, and then, you know, where you were at with your team, maybe when we first talked, and what you've got now.
Yep. So we are a plumbing, gas fitting and drain laying company based in Petone and Wellington. We predominantly do residential plumbing, gas work, central heating installations. We're just moving into gas servicing as well. We manage a lot of our own smaller projects like bathroom renovations and the like, but we also work with a team of builders from kind of high end right down to their little projects as well. Back in 2015, when we started on PT, there was just myself and an apprentice. And at the moment, we're currently a team of 15, including myself and Kirsty. And that ranges from 5 apprentices, ranging from first to fourth year, certifying plumbers, gas fitters, drain layer, and 3 in the office, including Kirsty.
Yep, perfect, yep. Cool. And you, Kerry?
We're Electrical and Automation Solutions. So we're electrical based, and with 90% of our work's in the dairy industry. So we do both servicing work and full turnkey projects. The size of our team was 1 when I started. Watch out, Tony. And
had a few subbies, didn't you?
Yeah. I'd have 1 or 2 contractors, but we were pretty small. And now we've got 9 staff and 3 contractors, and we pretty much swell with contractors as we need, you know. So yeah, I used to do everything on the tools and everything, and now pretty much my focus is purely on quoting and bringing in the work.
Sweet. Actually, I just meant to mention, team, there is a workbook for today, which is on the Facebook page and been emailed to everyone. I'll reference that. If you haven't got it, that's fine. If you have, that's cool. It's a question already, straight out of the gate. Can you tell us about your worst hire? And what you did wrong when you hired them? We'll get to that.
That'll come, yeah.
We've all got some good experience with that. I was sharing a couple beforehand. So Jace, maybe just jump in and explain to everyone, I guess the question is, do you have a hiring process, and can you explain how it works?
Yep. So we, probably not right from the start, but we certainly learnt earlier on. We use like the Profitable Tradie formatted ad that we put into TradeMe and Facebook. We then will, obviously when we receive a candidate, ideally we'll have a CV, have a quick look at that. I really like to jump onto Facebook and have a look at their profile, because it'd be amazing what you can find out about people through there. And I also like to kind of ask around through people that I know within the trade about particular people. Then we set up a one-on-one meeting, and we follow the profitable trading question script pretty much to the letter, because it just seems to work. I do sometimes fine tune it if I'm not kind of getting the right answers, or I feel I haven't really got a good feel as to how the person is. So I may just kind of stick on a specific question for a little bit longer, but it normally takes kind of 45 minutes, an hour, I guess, max. Following that, we finish up, we just explain the next step. If the candidate's really good, we quite often get them to come back in and have another interview with one of our senior tradesmen, and so they can get a feel for him as well. And if they're looking pretty good, then we have a contract ready to go and pretty much hit while it's hot.
Cool. Yeah. So, Kerry, how does your process work, mate?
Yep. So once I started on the program, I got a process. I didn't use the process, but I got the process. So that was a big start. So same as Jason, pretty much exactly the same. Speed's the key. So if somebody applies halfway through before the job's finished, we get that guy in straight away for a job advert. A job interview. We don't wait till the end of the close date. That's probably one big thing. And then and also we get them to fill out, every single person fills out a application for employment. So that's about a 4-page document, and we've found that really helps, because it actually people don't tell you everything, and I think sometimes this thing here just brings it out of them, like convictions or anything like that. It just brings it out without you actually asking the question. But I'm the same as Jason. The last interview I did, we used the standard questions, but I also threw in a few there that were really tailored specifically to him. So because when you know somebody, you tweak the questions a little bit as well, So, but pretty much what Jason does.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that's I'll just share the screen for a minute. In the workbook, you'll see one of the key lessons that I guess I've learned and found is that it's critical to have a process. And different processes might look different, but having one is the key to success. Is that a fair comment, guys?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And so there's an 11-step process that we talk through. And look, you may not do all of the steps necessarily, or you might add something in there, but the process is critical. Don't shortcut the process because you're desperate or because this person kind of looks good at first glance. Is that a fair comment, guys?
Yeah.
And actually, I missed out on checking, checking their references as well. That's really key.
Yeah. This one here. Not that one. That one can be helpful.
Number 9. Yeah.
Yeah. Number 9 here.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think if you don't check references, you've got rocks in your head.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, right at the start, I've found that when you do that phone interview, normally you can sort of trust your gut as well on there. You get a good inkling on there what they're going to be like, and then I just set the office lady, set her onto Facebook stalking people, and then that's gold. Because when I came and had an interview last time, a guy turned up, and they were all like, "He's not going to be a fit, man." And he turned up, and I had the gut feeling as well. Turned up. And 100% was right, So
yeah,
we still followed the process right the way through.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's something there that number 5, telephone interview is like just a quick 10 or 15 minute, even less sometimes, quick call to make sure you're not going to spend an hour or whatever with someone who's really just a waste of time. And there are scripts for all of this in the membership site as well, which you can get into. So that's cool, guys. Appreciate that. So, Kerry, what do you do to prepare for interviews? Actually, no. Question before that. What do you think is important to attract high-quality people?
So pretty much the job advert has to be killer, and it has to stand out from the rest. So so many times I've gone on to Seek or to Trade Me, and I've looked at other people's ads, and they're pretty boring old standard ads that just don't really jump at your attention. Yep. Every one of the guys that I've got that's been really good has commented on how good the job adverts were, you know, so you've got to really catch their attention.
Yeah.
And I think pitches that you use, you know, you've got to show that your team's a fun, energetic team and that they're, you know, going to be a cool people to work for.
Yeah, huge.
And, and what I've found is the employee referrals, you know, the best people that I've hired have been people that have actually been referred to me, you know what I mean? And the other thing is not scrimping on saving money, because the biggest thing is you need to get that job advert out there and you want maximum coverage for that, you know. So get out there. The last guys that applied for the job weren't looking for a job, but because I'd boosted the job on Facebook and really gone pretty hard, it popped up on their newsfeed, and they found it, you know. So most of the good guys that you want to hire. They actually don't know that they want to work for your company yet. So you need to, you know, attract them. So that's what I've found works.
Yeah, and I just a question there, because I think this is massive. This one here, you know, when you're doing a great job with your team, when you start getting employee referrals, that's when you know you've got the culture. Good. What do you think's the key there to creating the, you know, this is sort of a side topic, but it's actually a really important part of it. What's the key to building that, I guess, culture or that atmosphere that makes your current team members want to refer?
What's the key to that? Just building that culture and having those values and living to those values. You know what I mean? It's not. So I have learned the hard way that it's not all about giving them allowances and giving them bonuses. It's about actually making it a really cool place to work and making it a fun place to work. You know what I mean? So. Yeah, just because you've got a really high-paid job and you've got all these allowances doesn't mean that it's going to be, you know, like a really good culture. You need to just have, like, fun events with the team. Like, we've done things like mountain biking and team events, which just really help build together, you know, build the culture.
Yeah. Yeah. Jason, any other thoughts, mate, on you know, what you can do to look attractive?
Yeah, no, look, I totally agree with Kerry. I think he's pretty much, you know, hit the nail on the head. I think you've just got to really position yourself as an employer of choice, and, you know, and the word soon gets out there that, you know, and especially like you've said from your team, that you're a good employer to work for. And if someone does come and say something about you, you know, they've got your back and they say, no, hey, mate, it's all good here. And yeah, just the culture. The culture's huge, because the guys will talk about it. And the word will get out.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And it's funny, you talk about Facebook stalking potential employees. Well, the good people are going to Facebook stalk you, yep. Website stalk you, all that sort of stuff. And what we've found, I think we actually did websites for both of you guys way back when, but I've found this often, is that once you get a great website and work on your social media presence, that's actually a bonus for hiring as well. Because yeah, the good people check it out and they're like, hey, these guys actually look professional and they look like they, you know what they're about.
Yep.
And good people definitely vibe with that in my experience. And the market for talent's pretty fierce, right? Well, it certainly has been.
Yep.
Yeah. What would you say, and either one can jump in, what would you say about putting the pay rates and stuff in the ads? How do you deal with that? What have you found works best?
We've kind of tried both. Yep. And we've had varying results, because I mean you're always going to get those guys that are kind of money driven and they're looking for, you know, the best, the top dollar. I guess we've kind of started to focus more on the actual right guys for the right team, and so we've focused a bit more on that culture and finding the right, you know. And you know, those rewards will come, you know, and as long as you're clear and you explain that to them that, you know, they're there for the, you know, for the right person, then, yeah, most of the guys are open to it. I actually, like Kerry had an interesting comment just when he said that a lot of the good guys don't actually know that they're looking for a job, and that's why you got to, you know, really push it. Yeah.
Any thoughts on the salary sort of advertising, Kerry?
Yeah, I always put the dollar value in there. And it's funny, like normally I put my standard dollar value for a tradesman is $32 to $38 an hour. You know, I have, or it might be $32 to $40 an hour now, but I do have a guy on $38 an hour, but the last guy that I hired, I actually hired him at $32 an hour. You know what I mean? I said to him that I'm going to build you up to this. So I've never put a job ad bit out and hired them at the top rate. No one's ever asked me for the top rate. They've all said, I want about, you know, the middle of that. So probably don't be afraid to lift those numbers up there, because at the end of the day, you've got the choice whether you hire somebody of those numbers or not. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But also, yeah. One other thing on there I was going to say, Tony, is hiring the right people. The other key thing that I think is quite key is training, like having a like an offer to train people. The last guy that came over to me, who is my number one Sparky now, he actually came across to us because his employer didn't want to help him out with training. Yep. And he is next level, you know what I mean? So, man, that little bit of money that I'm going to spend on him training, he's just so grateful, and he is just amazing.
And this is a really important point. It applies to actually marketing your services as well. Look, the money side of it is definitely part of the equation. And the quality tradespeople are going to expect to be paid well as well, and so they should be. And even if you do pay a little bit more, sometimes it's good in the sense that you have a bit of leverage over them as well, because it's difficult to get that somewhere else. But it's not all about money. There's no doubt about that. But the reason people often think that it is for hiring people is because that's all they really ever advertise. They don't really think about how to position yourself as a great employer, how to you know, give people what they want in terms of respect and appreciation and training and opportunities and all that sort of stuff. So I guess we're not talking about being bending over backwards to do what everyone wants all the time. That's not what we're talking about. But the good people definitely resonate with having a place and a culture that's proactive and professional. Yeah, there's no doubt about that. So yeah, that's super good, super good. Okay, so what do you do to prepare for interviews then? How do you go about that process? You want to kick that off maybe, Jason?
I'll always have a read through their CV, obviously, and try and find out as much as I can just to get a little bit of a feel for them. I like to do it in our office, just because it allows our office staff to meet the person as well, and it's quite a good indication, you know, sure. When they come into the office and they meet the girls, and they, you know, it's amazing if someone walks in and they're not that welcoming, the girls kind of come in and go, ooh, you know. You know, that probably didn't start so well. And you can get a good gauge of that, because that's probably how they're going to interact with members of the public. But yeah, certainly I like to just go through the scripts again and just make sure the questions that I want to ask are clear in my head. Because, you know, you want to be the boss. This is your interview. You know, this is your company, and you want to be in control of it. Obviously turn your phone off so there's no distractions, and make sure everyone knows that you're in a meeting. You know, you don't want to be fielding calls left, right and center. But yeah, just basically be the boss, eh? Just, you know, you control it. If it starts to go a little bit off track, just bring it back online.
Yep. Yeah. And what do you do, Kerry?
Yeah, pretty much the same. Like, just make sure you aren't doing it at the kitchen table. We do it as an office as well. Exactly the same as what Jason was saying. And just and reading through the questions, like same as Jason, Facebook stalk them and make sure you've got lots of data, and really look at their CV. The last guy, he wrote in there about his kid's name, and he wrote some stuff about himself. So I actually used that in the interview and said, oh, I see you've got a little 3-month-old boy called Arlo, you know. And so, because in the back of your mind, I'm thinking, well, I actually want him to select us as well. He's interviewing me, so if I can show a little bit of
empathy,
connecting with him, yeah, you know, that I'm interested in him, then he might feel a bit better as well, you know. So just making sure you're really well prepared, all the stuff's all printed out in a folder ready to go, you know, so you're not trying to fumble around, and yeah, just make sure you've got plenty of time.
So you guys are, you know, more at the green end of the traffic light than the red end now. Obviously, you know, we can always all improve. What did you do when you first started interviewing? Because I think that might be helpful for some people who have been on, you know, haven't been involved for a while and maybe getting into interviewing or using the systems we have for interviewing. What did you do to make sure when you first did an interview that you didn't balls it up? Or maybe you did balls it up in that movie. I don't know.
My first one I did was at the kitchen table. So my first one was at the kitchen table, and my first one, I didn't have all the data. I didn't know what I was doing. And I think it was just, we had a really good conversation and we sort of worked out the job together. You know, that was when I hired my office manager.
Yep.
It was just completely different than what it is now, you know, like, so now it's, we've got a process and I'm organized and it's at the office and, you know, we sit down and we ask and we have a drink first and we have a chit chat, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
so it's just, and I think worth, thing is like, just relax and try and chill out and enjoy it, you know what I mean? Because if you're uptight, then, you know, that other person's probably going to feel it. And having a bit of a joke at the start or having a laugh and trying to lighten the mood to get you into the mood is probably a good thing, you know?
Yep.
Yeah.
Did you have something to add, Jason?
No, I was just laughing that, yeah, our first interview was at the kitchen table as well. Yeah. And yeah, I mean, it just was really just a kind of a chat, you know, there was no real format to it. And you know, none of the real specific questions were asked. It was, yeah, it was just a bit of a catch up really. But yeah, certainly, yeah, be, you know, yeah, definitely don't rush, you know, don't make it hard right from the start. You know,
yeah.
That's certainly something I've learned.
One of the, like, hiring the right people is like, it's massive key to success, right? And I guess what I'd encourage people to do is, you know, if you haven't done a lot of interviewing before, we don't do it every week. We might do it a couple of times a year, maybe, or maybe not, or maybe you're a slightly bigger business and you've done do it, you know, more often, which is great. But practice never hurts. So get the interview questions and practice them. Watch the trainings and actually practice them so you're familiar with them. Because the time you spend practicing is important, because as Kerry said, it's a two-way assessment. Like, they're figuring out if you're any good as well as you figuring out if they're any good. So, you know, obviously we want to make it a bit tough for them to get the job and make it a process, but we still have to impress them. And so the professionalism that we show and the preparation, they can only judge us by the way we act and what they see. They can't really know what we're like. So I think that's massive. If you practice, even do a bit of role playing, you know, oh, it's kind of weird. It's not what we learned at Tech or TAFE, but it's like flipping important. You want to get good at this. And this skill of hiring is one of the most important skills to perfect in my book.
One other thing, Tony, as a founder, is that I try and show them when they're at the interview. I try when right at the end when I tell them a bit about the job and about what we do. I show them our job software system and how the techs do their job. And I talk up how it's really awesome that we have this instant feedback and we've got all these really awesome systems. And I show them through some of the processes that we do. And I show them, look, I can tell exactly where this person is and what he's doing. And I can, he's just taking a picture. And I show them that stuff. And some of these guys have come from companies where it's just all paper-based and they've had a frustration with the paper. And so I said, you know, all your COCs are all just online. And some of those guys love that. You know, they love that you're actually using the technology to try and lift the bar, you know?
Yeah. I think that's gold. I mean, you do have to sell yourself. So showing them the cool stuff, the systems, the culture, even talking about your company values and stuff. Some people won't even care about that, but they're not the people you want to hire.
Yeah. And we do give out our company values at the end of the interview. So that's something that they can take away, our rules of the game and our company values. So, yeah.
Yeah, perfect.
This is what we're about. Yep.
So good. So Bridget's got a question. How do you approach a situation if you have approached a person? Toby, can you find Bridget and just unmute her? So I don't entirely understand the question. It might be good just to, if you're okay with that, Bridget. Sorry, there's a bit of feedback there, mate. Okay, no problem. So question is, how do you approach the situation if you have approached a person?
So if I've approached them, so I still follow them through the process. So I suppose that's similar to, I suppose you're talking about whether you, so you really know the person is what you're sort of talking about. So I still make them go through the process. I still make them apply online. I still make them send through their CV. I still follow everything. What I was saying before about the, I still do a telephone interview, like the guy that I interviewed from my business for the estimators role. I still rang him up during the day and just said, hey, it's Kerry here from Electrical Automation Solutions, followed the script and said, I was just ringing you up about the estimator position you applied for and just followed that through. And then when I did the face-to-face interviews, we asked most of the questions, but most of those questions are aimed at how people will respond to certain situations. So because I'd worked closely with this guy for a while, I knew how he was going to answer most of these questions. I knew a lot about him. So I actually tailored some of the questions to suit the role, you know, which I got a lot more out of it, because I actually tailored them to say, what would you do in this situation? Do you know what I mean? And how would you react here? And I sort of did the second interview with him, like on the first interview, if that makes sense, because I got some really good questions with him. But you've still got to follow the process, because the key is making sure that that they understand you've got a process and that, you know, that you're following the process.
So just in the workbook, there's the examples of some of the interview questions and stuff, which are all in the membership site, so you can go and grab those. It's a great question. Here's something else that I highly recommend you do in that situation. Because what happens when you approach someone, they have all the power. So they're the ones who can say yes or no, and you're almost in a lower position. So if that's the case, advertise the job as well. So advertise it so you can say, hey, we're advertising this job. We'd love you to apply. And then make them apply through the same process. Because what I find happens when you approach people, they're like, yeah, I'm interested, but then they never apply, or they don't apply when you want them, or it's 6 months later, and there's no real energy or urgency for them to actually do anything because the ball's in their court. So if you set it up as a normal hiring process, even if you, if you do want to approach them, that's fine. You might actually get someone else who's good as well, and then you've got a couple of horses you can back as well, which can be super helpful. The other thing is, if you put them through the process and they get the job, they feel much better about it as well. Actually feels like they've won, they've achieved victory, which is great for them, and they'll treat it more, it'll be more valuable to them. So I think that's a great question. Okay. Bridget said, yes, we know this person well. We think we may need to slow down the process. Luckily, he appears to be keen to. Great. Yeah. Perfect. And that could be a great hire. Often is a great hire, but still run the process. Okay. Cool. Brandon said, good advice not hiring at the kitchen table, but those of the smaller companies, where would you recommend conducting the interview? Get an office somewhere.
Yeah, there's offices for free.
Yeah, yep. Yep. Accountant's office, lawyer's office, IRL yep. office, treat it professionally. Yep, yep.
Hello, great question. If you're with the BNZ, they've got the little rooms as well you can use.
Yeah, so there'll be banks in Oz that are similar as well. Yep. Okay, cool. So, question. What are the critical parts of the hiring process to get right? What's the absolute parts you just got to get right?
Speed.
Speed?
Yeah, so like don't muck around, because if they're really good, someone else will snap them up very quickly if you don't, you know what I mean? So just, and if you're not the person, if you are a procrastinator, get someone else to run it and then you just sit in it, you know, but speed is the key.
I think like a couple of things that I find, you've just got to be comfortable. You've got to be, practice until you feel really comfortable. And, you know, if you tend to get a little bit nervous, like I used to, you just keep practicing and, you know, just go through the script in your head, because the more you do it, the obviously the easier it becomes. Definitely number one thing would be qualifying the person's references. So actually seeing that they're actually relevant, and that they're not just a mate that's just there to give them a bit of a pump up. And also to actually find out whether this person has the skills that you need. So they might look really good on paper, but you know, if you're hiring someone for the front office that you want to answer the phones and do customer relations, but they've only worked in the back office, they may not have the skills that you need. You can teach them, but you know, you need to kind of figure out whether it's relevant to the role that you're trying to fill. And quite often listen to your gut. Your gut feeling will tell you a lot.
Yeah, huge.
Probably also just on that is make sure you hire on attitude and don't lower your bar, you know what I mean? Like, just never drop your bar. You're better off to find alternate short-term solutions than dropping the bar and having the headache later on, because trying to sort out a mess later on is like 10 times worse than just delaying it a little bit.
Yeah, I might have said it to one of you guys recently. I can't remember. Might have been Graham. I can't remember. But anyway, I've heard it said to me that it's better to be, rather than be unhappily married, it's better to be unhappily single. The same applies to hiring people. It's better to have no one than have someone who's no good, because it's a nightmare.
Yeah.
And I think the attitude thing, and look, actually, I'd love to hear from the rest of you. Just put me, if you've hired someone out of desperation, who are the best of a bad bunch. If you've done that before, just put me in the chat, because that's something that we, like, chat's going wild.
Yep.
I think we've all done that, yeah?
Yeah.
Every time so far, Ants, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, that's something we've got to be really strong emotionally on, and realize that they have to be good enough. And in fact, you know, it's been challenging to find good people, particularly in the last 2 or 3 years, right across ANZ. You know, it's been tricky, but you've got to hold your standards, because if you do drop them, you know, it's going to cause you a lot of challenges. Sometimes you might go through the hiring process and get no, and you have to repeat it. We can talk about that as well. Yeah. Team, I'd love to just pause for a minute. I'd love to hear from the rest of you. What have you found most helpful, most valuable, most interesting so far from the session? Just pop that in the chat. It'd be great to get a few shares and see what's really hitting home for everyone. Courtney says, follow the process. Process is huge. Process, importance of speed, yeah. You need a process. Ollie, everything, mate. There you go. Actually planning the interview and not winging it. You can't win it. Be the boss, Glyne, yeah, man. Be the boss. That's important for you. Don't hire in desperation. Promote your culture and training office. Process works. Never miss a reference check. Go with your gut. Don't settle, Amelia. Nice. Do not hire out of desperation. Ask about family, out of work questions. Yeah, Callum, good one. Reinforcing what we know, but ignore speed and gut feelings. Phil, speed and Facebook boost ads to find people who aren't currently looking. Yeah, having more structure. Yeah, massive. Reference checks. Yeah, look, guys, the reference check is huge. Here it is. Here's the reference checking template. You absolutely must use this. Jason is bang on the money. Two things you are doing in a reference check. One is you're checking the quality of the person giving the reference. So that's important. And that means not necessarily whether they're a good or a bad person, but you know, have they seen this person do the type of work that you want them to do? How long have they worked with this person? Are they a mate or are they their direct report? And then you're assessing the quality of the actual applicant. And there's one question in here, which is critical. I think you'll both agree with me.
Yep.
Team, is this one here.
Yep.
You know, on a scale of 1 to 10, where 1 is never and 10 is no question, how likely are you to re-employ?
Yeah.
It's the closer. I know, Jason, you've hired an 8 before.
Oh God, I've hired a 6.
And yeah, 6s are not good.
A 6s is not good.
Yeah, 6 is basically a moron.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah.
So you're looking for 9s or 10s. 9s or 10s are people who are good. 7 or 8 are real average. proceed with caution. Yeah. So,
it's good we can laugh about it now.
Oh, mate, well, that's what you get. Experience is what you get right after you need it. Michelle said, sell yourself and check out references. Michelle, make our business the best place to work to stand out. Yeah, you've got to stand out. Chris, you can always do something with a good person with a great attitude with more limited skill as opposed to the other way around. So true. Awesome, guys. If you do have more questions, please feed them through as we go. We've got a couple more questions to cover off. This one should be fun. So what are the biggest hiring mistakes you've made, and what did or would you do differently next time? Who wants to go first?
Hiring a six was a big mistake. God, look, if they're not a 9 or a 10, I mean, I wouldn't even bother. I guess one of our biggest mistakes right at the start was being really desperate to find someone. So we really needed someone. We were really busy. But it was just that whole case of the interview around the kitchen table and just a bit of a chat and, you seem a nice enough kind of person and not same situation, not qualifying the reference, just not kind of doing that due diligence, just not really looking into it, just going, oh, yes, we've got someone and that'll get us across the mark. And also just not checking the person's suitability and their experience for the role, because that has bitten us in the butt as well a couple of times. And it's
Can you give us an example?
Yeah, so it was related to our front office. Yep. And we hired someone that on paper looked incredible. We didn't follow the interview process, and it just turned out to be a let's go for a coffee and have a chat kind of talk. And it all seemed very, very nice. But then once we actually got the person in that role, yeah, it was just a train wreck. Very abrupt, because this is the face of your company, that is that first phone call. Just abrupt, kind of bordering on rude, no tolerance for anything. And it was cringeworthy. Yeah. Yep.
So, and you hadn't tested that person on the phone?
No.
Yeah.
No.
So if someone's going to be doing using the phone, part of the interview process has to be on the phone.
Yep.
Yep.
Yep. Definitely.
Okay. Kerry, what about for you, mate?
Probably biggest mistake is,
I have done a couple of, yeah.
Is probably not hiring for attitude. Like I hired one guy because he was supposed to be quite a good sparky and he was supposed to be good. But I had an inkling about his probably wasn't such a good team fit. I had a bit of an inkling. And later on, it turns out that it just, once he'd been with us for a while, it just sort of came to the surface and he just wasn't the right fit for our culture, So for me now, when I look at hiring somebody, it's always attitude is the number one thing, because you can train skill, but you can't train attitude, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. So how do you go about assessing attitude?
So I get three different people in the interview. Like last one we had, I had a tradesman and I had myself and the operations manager. And so just trying to listen to some of the answers he gives, like listen to how they answer the questions. And if they answer like they're like a bit cocky, then that really, it doesn't stop me hiring them, but it makes me ask more questions, because I quite like a guy that's confident, but I don't like a guy that's cocky and arrogant, you know what I mean? So if I think he's a bit cocky and arrogant, then I'll try and expand a little bit and see if he can hang himself with that little bit of rope,
Jason, did you have something to add, mate?
No. No, not really. It's, pretty much similar to Kerry, yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just if you get a bit of an inkling that something is not quite right, then just continue with that line of questioning, just until you confirm whether it's, maybe it's just something that they've kind of said because they're nervous, or something that they've, that they are genuinely, what they genuinely do. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that I've, a classic hiring mistake that I made a few years ago was hiring an office person. and we did a job test with them. So, and I, if you're hiring office people, definitely get them in and do some stuff with it. Get them to do some stuff. And there's some resources in the membership side on this. If you can with a tradesperson, that could be good too. Sometimes it's a bit tricky, but if possible, it can be a good thing to do. But this person did their test and then didn't save their work. and I was like, oh, they were nervous, you know. That could happen to anyone. But that was exactly what this person was like the whole time that they worked for us. Forgetful, not very smart, didn't pay attention. So one thing I found is if you notice small little details about them, as people are in small things, they tend to be in everything. You know, if they're a little bit standoffish and difficult to talk to in the interview, most likely that's what they're going to be like the whole time. So you might think it's nerves. You've got to be really careful not to look for what you want. You've actually got to see what's there. So don't go looking for stuff that you want to find. You know, stick to the questions and see what comes up, I think is huge. Cool, okay.
Yeah, Tony, we had an interesting interview where we asked all the questions on the script and every answer was, oh, that's a hard question. And then there would be this really long pause of silence and we would just wait and wait and wait and there would be no answer. And it just kind of shows that this person is just not thinking, just not engaging. And, you know, it was very, very unusual.
Yeah. Maybe they can't think.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Sam says, oops. Also, I find they often only have one reference or they got fed up with where they were working, so left. How do I address the above?
You need to have a look at the references and see what they are, but you need to get like a couple of references because it can get skewed quite easily. Yeah, I think everyone can get a couple of references. It's not hard to get a couple of references, but if somebody says that they left their last job, then that would be like, oh yeah, sweet. I mean, it might be true, but I'd definitely try and investigate that further, you know, like one of the guys that applied for the last job we just did, like the office lady dug deeper into his history and found that he'd been made redundant 3 times. You know what I mean? It's like, well, is that just bad luck or is that saying something? You know what I mean? So, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I agree. More than one reference is critical. And dive deeper. Just ask people within the trade or your trade, you know, because someone will know something.
Yeah. So, Sam, your question is an interesting one. They only have one reference or they got fed up with where they were and so they left. What does that say about that person? You know, if they are 19 or 21 and they've only got one reference, well, okay, that might make sense. But if they're 32 and they've only had one reference and that was, you know, maybe a couple of years ago, and so there's some gaps in their work history, I would be asking myself, what's the reason for that? Hmm. I noticed that you've got this reference. What were you doing for the other times? And if people say they left because they're fed up, well, what does that say about them? You know, is it the employer or was it the employee? Hmm. You know, that's a warning bell.
Yeah.
It's a definite warning bell. I'd be careful.
You can use that work history as well. So you can look at it and if they've had like 10 jobs in the last, you know, 20 years and every 2 years they've kind of moved on to something else, you can see that pattern, you know, what's actually going on. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So there are some people who will have had a bad experience with an employer and that definitely happens. And so it's how they talk about that experience is probably important. So if they, you know, basically like the employer was useless and they don't take any responsibility for the relationship themselves, then that's probably a bad sign. But if they can talk about it and say, well, the person was like this and that, and I tried this and that, but I just found it didn't quite work, that's a different thing.
It's normally quite clear, like when you speak to them about their previous job, it's normally quite clear who was in the wrong, you know what I mean? It's like, you can just tell by the tone of their voice and you can just say, oh, you're going to be a difficult character, you know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, it's a classic sign of a difficult character if they've talking about how bad their old boss was.
Yeah, and they're always blaming other people and blaming that person. It was his fault, you know, so it's definitely a bad person can shines out like pretty easy.
Yeah. Trust your gut on that one. Bridget says, I have concern that our systems are not what this job applicant is used to. Do we discuss this? You could say, hey, that's what we're working on improving. And you could tell them the story about, look, this is where the business is at. This is where we see it. This is our goal. This is our vision for the business. These are all the things we're going to be working on over the next 12 to 18 months. Really excited to have you on the journey. So paint the bigger picture.
Yeah.
So if you don't have all that stuff in place, paint the bigger picture. Right person will resonate with that. Michelle, we also asked for a non-work related character reference, not a family member. Yeah, that's fine. It doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to be good on the job. There's nothing like a job reference because that's related to their character and behavior at work. But the other stuff can certainly give you an insight into, you know, what they're like as a person. Difficult to rely on it solely, but sometimes you might have to. Maybe it's their first job. Anne-Marie, good question. Would either of you recommend training an apprentice over someone experienced?
Yeah, it just depends on the situation, really, for me. Like, depends on what you want that person to do. You know what I mean? Apprentice is good to better help somebody else out, but if you want to have them out earning money, a tradesman is straight off the bat. Is like, yeah, I couldn't have hired an apprentice with only one other tradesman, you know, but once you've got some tradesmen on board, then you can hire apprentices. So I think that's really, it depends on the situation. I know now is a great time to hire apprentice because I see the government's doing all sorts of grants. But yeah, it still needs to work. You know what I mean? He still needs to be able to leave him by himself and he still needs to be able to do the work. If he can't do that, then yeah, it makes it a bit more difficult.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. You certainly, ideally you want to get a couple of tradesmen or, you know, people up to speed first and then you can start looking at the apprentices. I know that some apprentices do have better attitudes than, you know, experienced guys, but you kind of need to get yourself started first.
Yeah. Kara.
Probably with that too is with the apprentice too, like there's a massive difference. Like I've trained a couple of apprentices and there's a massive difference between apprentices. So if you can get a good apprentice from the start, then you're on a winner. You know, like if you've got an apprentice that is always dragging his feet, then that's just hard work. You know what I mean? So yeah, if you're going to hire an apprentice, make sure he is the top of the class effectively. You know what I mean? Like don't hire someone that struggles because you'll be struggling along beside him and you'll be spending your time trying to kick him along. You know what I mean? Rather than him driving himself.
Yeah. You'll just end up micromanaging him.
I'm real, this is a mistake I see a lot of people make early days when they're hiring, is they get an apprentice because they think it's going to cost less, but it costs, the opportunity cost and the cost is huge because you're actually not able to make money out of them necessarily straight away, depending on the quality of them. So if it was, most people here have three or four more people, which is great. But you need enough people who can help you with the training, number one, and then keep the jobs flowing and keep the money coming in as well. So it's a balancing act. But if someone was themselves and they're thinking about their first employee, I personally wouldn't hire an apprentice. I'd hire a tradesperson. Then I'd think about an apprentice.
Yep. And you can use those. You can use things like Gateway and the like to get, you know, a young fella in a couple of days a week, and then you can see how they work and interact with the team.
So here's a great question, and I can't see who asked it. Do you always use the reference that stated, or can you also call their former workplaces to gauge them from that angle as well? A little bit of detective work. Well, there's a couple of legal things here.
Yeah.
If you get them to fill in an application form, there can be a we've got an application form on the member site, and there'll be a permission down the bottom that gives you permission to talk to any of their former employers. And if they sign that, then you can, kind of from a legal perspective. You might do it anyway, and you'd probably be fine, they'd never know, but probably a good idea if you can to get the real story. Anything more to say on that one?
No, that's about it.
No, that's pretty much it.
Just making sure you do that application for employment. That is gold, that bit of paper.
Yep, cool. Okay. Michelle asked, what advice do you give to companies who have no team yet only one-man bands or two guys and no culture? I think what I said before is important. Paint the journey. This is what we're looking to build. This is where we're going. Sell your own personal integrity and values and energy is really important because they're buying you as an employer. So I think that you can definitely get through that thing. As you get more people, in some ways it's easier because you do build a culture, but don't let that put you off for sure. Yeah. Okay, let's push on. This is an important question. How do you deal with the situation where you've been looking for ages but you can't find the right people?
Just be patient. They'll come. Just keep working on the things that you can keep working on. I mean, we had a period of over a year that we were advertising and we interviewed lots of people, and they just weren't a right fit for us. So you've just got to be patient. It will happen. Yeah, I know it seems hard at the time, but when I look back, I think, oh, look, you know, it's only a short period of time in a grand scheme of things. And so, yeah, just take your time. Don't rush it.
Just don't jump the gun. And if you're struggling with workload, like try and use some other avenues just to get you through till you can find the right person. So like use some subcontractors, or if you've got an agreement with somebody to borrow, you know, to use other staff. But definitely don't rush it, because if you rush it and get the wrong person, then Jesus, it's actually harder to get rid of that person than it is to employ a new one.
Yeah. Yeah, I got a few thoughts on this one too. So there's a number of ways to deal with it. Look, and it is a frustration for sure. First one is don't let that hold you back from making changes to your business. So there, one of the areas you can look at, if you are overworked and you need more people, let's look at the kind of work you're doing right now. Let's figure out what work you're doing, you know, what's most profitable for you at the moment, to make sure that those valuable tradesperson hours that you have got, that you've got, are spent doing the work that makes you the most money. So that's one thing. You don't want to soak up a lot of hours and work that's really low profit or for clients who are difficult to work with or who don't pay. So have a look internally at how your work's set up. Look to put your prices up to increase the profitability on the work that you have at the moment. Look for ways that you can get people to work maybe an extra 5 or 10% during the week. You know, if you've got a few people and everyone does a few extra hours, that can add up to an extra day's worth of work that you get done during the week. Look at subcontractors or getting some help from other people. So that's on the just what you're doing right now front. On the other front is if you are continually advertising for people and you're not getting what you want, well, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing expecting a different result. That's banging your head against a brick wall. So there's a couple of variables we should look at. We should look at the offer. Okay, we should look at how our company's positioned. What can we do to look more attractive? So that might be the offer, and that could be salary. It could be the way your ad's written. You need to change it up. If you're just not getting traction, let's look at that. The other part might be, hey, you've had a couple of decent people that you've talked to, but you haven't managed to snag them, which means your process is not right. You didn't impress them. Something went wrong when you actually talked to them. So there are still levers that you can pull is what I'm driving at. Does that sound fair enough, guys?
Yep.
Cool, okay. Got a couple of questions here. Dave, when you are hiring, did you hire because you had the work? This is a great question. Did you hire because you had the work to carry another tradie, or that you were looking to quote more and get more work in the door? So what comes first, hiring or the work?
Hiring. The work will come. It's like you create a void and then you'll easily fill it. It just, I don't know why it happens or how it happens, but it just does. Yeah, so definitely the hiring. Don't wait for the work to come, because you would have missed opportunities.
Yeah. And if you wait, if you're too tapped out, by the time you try and hire, you won't have enough time to actually hire, you know, so you'll be too stressed out and you'll be like, I haven't got time to do a job over it, you know what I mean? I think the key was, I think, Tony, the key you say was when you get to 80% capacity.
I was just going to say that, mate, you're totally on the money. Let's say that's your capacity. Can you guys see what I'm writing?
Yeah,
cool. So that's 100% capacity. That's 80%. You want to hire when you're around 80% capacity, because growing, hiring, recruiting, doing all that stuff takes time, takes effort. And so that will put you on the next sort of, that'll put you on the next path of growth because you've got more capacity. So yeah, couldn't agree with you guys more. You've got to, if you find the right person, hire them. And look, most people, honestly, they lose so much opportunity they don't even realize. There's so much opportunity just spilling over top of the glass that you don't even recognize it. And you've probably got work for, half to three quarters of a tradesperson already. You're losing clients because you can't get to them. You're losing jobs because you can't quote them, whatever it is. That's massively important. What's the worst that can happen as well? Everyone's scared. What's going to happen if I don't have the work? Well, you could do some more marketing. You could spend a bit more time on your quoting and your sales. And hey, if it really doesn't work out, you can always restructure it. And people do that. We had to look at that recently with COVID and our workforces as well. So great question. John, what if you're doing contract work and you pull a big job and you need men fairly quickly apart from subbies? Tricky question.
Yeah, that's a tricky question. We use subcontractors. We, in the dairy industry, we've got like big bell curves of work. And so in our winter shut, there's a lot of work and then it sort of tapers off a little bit after that. So we use subcontractors there. I'm not sure how, if you're going to win the big contract, then you just need to get advertising pretty quickly and then employ somebody and then keep advertising and keep quoting so you can keep that guy in work, I suppose.
And I guess it's about planning as well. So
yeah,
like Kerry knows that right now dairy factories are shut for the winter. Cows are dried off. It's going to be busy. But you've nurtured the relationship with those subcontractors over a period of time and over years, and so you kind of know that that's going to be part of it.
Yeah, and it is about that planning too, isn't it? Because if you're going to have a crack at a big contract, then you should have in your mind the team that you're going to need, to actually deliver it. So, and whether it is through subcontractors or building the team up.
You might have a period of time where the guys have got to do some big hours for a few weeks as well. So you do that, but you can't have them doing big hours forever because you burn them out and then
you might have another guy in the industry that you can help each other out, when you've got big contracts you can swing and help each other's on different projects. There's lots of ways. You just need to try and find a way that works, but if you're constantly finding you're doing big projects and you're constantly finding you need more guys, then I think if you hire somebody and then just market hard out for the lulls so you can keep the work consistent,
I think Anne-Marie had a suggestion here, you can use a fixed term contract as well to self safeguard yourself sometimes, which is definitely true. Michelle said, do you tell candidates you have a KPI incentive system to earn more?
So on that one, I have KPI systems, but I've personally gone away from monthly incentives to everybody. I've just paid them really well, paid them above market rates, and it's actually the KPIs is just an expectation of their daily work, so it's not about getting them paid more money. It's like, this is your job and these are the things that you have to reach to be successful in that role,
Yeah, and we actually still do quarterly KPIs and we still pay out a bonus at the end of the year. But my thinking is heading along the lines of of Kerry, and actually, you know, these are just requirements of your job, and to fulfil your job. And so I think I'll be looking at that as well.
We do an employee of the month, which I trialled that a while ago, and that seems to work pretty good. So we do a $50 voucher for employee of the month. So and they get their photo up on the board, and then whenever we do our monthly health and safety meeting, we issue that out. We do the big congratulations, a $50 voucher. Mm.
Yeah. Any system that you have in your business that's, you know, shows your professionalism and stuff, I think it's a great thing to talk about in the hiring process, because that's actually a sales point. Mm. And the point that I'm really getting at here is when you're hiring people and when they read your job ad and when they're considering you, you need to have in the mind what are the things that are going to make them want to leave where they are now. What is the little niggle point? And it may not be a big niggle, it might be a little niggle, whatever it is. What are the things that even you as a you know, when you were working for someone else, what are the things that really frustrated you or you know, you felt were missing? Because you want to hit on those things. Like it could be poor organization. It could be you know, someone who's unreasonable. It could be lack of communication. It could be this person really doesn't seem to care about me. They just don't show any appreciation or any interest in my future. It could be lack of opportunities. It could be the same boring work. Maybe they just bash houses out, spec build houses all the time, and there's just no challenges. You know, it could be a bunch of things. So when we're hiring, it's thinking about, well, what are those things can we hit on, and then, you know, give an answer to that so that our setup looks really attractive. And so KPI systems, training systems, job management systems, employee recognition programs, yada, yada, yada. All those things are definitely, you know, they're great things to share. Cool. Okay. Courtney just said, we've started using backpackers for short-term spikes of work. They're often experienced from their home countries and managed through a backpacker agency. Cool. Yeah. You can get some sort of contingent labor. Okay. Team. Have you got any other advice that you'd have for people who are you know, hiring or thinking of hiring soon?
I just think it's about you know, just being comfortable with the process. You know, that you come across as that you basically build that you know, that culture and that employer of choice. I think that's really important. You know, get your brand out there and get a good name out there for yourself, which will take time. But yeah, just be comfortable with it, you know, be relaxed, kind of don't stress about it, but be prepared, I think. So, you know, an hour or two prior to an interview is worth gold, you know. Don't be like fluffing around and rushing around, but be ready if you find that really good candidate, you know, like get in there quick, because there'll be other guys looking and they'll snap them up. Or her up.
Yeah, sure.
And so probably the mind are exactly the same as Jason, but the other thing to add to that is probably the biggest thing is the right people on the bus is the key to success. You know, like if you don't have the right people on the bus, it's going to be just a headache for you, you know. So that's the biggest thing. Like Jason said, trust in the process. But and don't be afraid of the cost. Don't think of their salary that you're paying $100,000 in the first month. You know what I mean? It's going to be spread out over 12 months. Don't be afraid of hiring because you're worried about where am I going to find $100,000 from. You know, you're like, if you split it down into monthly, then it's not so bad. And the other thing is don't skimp on the cost. You know what I mean? Like, get those job adverts out there on Seek and on TradeMe and on LinkedIn and Facebook and just plaster it whatever you can and spend some money to get the right person, because, you know, he's going to make you good money. Like, you might spend, you know, like $1,000 or a couple of thousand dollars by the time you've got that guy on board, but he's going to earn that back within a matter of months, you know. So just, yeah, don't be afraid of spending the money to make the money.
It's hiring people is marketing, and treat it like you would market to get clients. In fact, it's more important marketing. Yeah, when you go to the market, you go hard and try and shake as many trees as you can. And it might be, you know, the online forums, Gumtrees, Seeks, Trade Me, Facebook, LinkedIn, you know, if you got contacts with your merchant or suppliers, your email database, you should definitely hit that when you're marketing for clients, because there'll be other tradespeople in there, and that's kind of the pool. There might be builders or plumbers if you're a Sparky or whatever. That's the kind of pool that you want to be looking into. So it could be signage. Any of those things you can definitely get into. Cool. If anyone else has any questions, please put them in as well. We'll deal with those. One thing that I think is critically important, I love what you guys have shared today, it's been super valuable, is understanding that possibly the most important work we do in our business is when we hire people. It's the thing that has a massive impact. So think about how much time you've spent perfecting your craft as a tradesperson. That is not as important as the skill you have with hiring people now that you're a business owner and you're looking to grow your business, because you want other people to be able to do that. So I think investing time and practice into getting good at this process is unbelievably important. Bridget says, do you follow the same process for all levels of hiring? This is a great question. So you guys have got, like Kerry, you've got a estimator, operations person, office person. Let's talk a bit about the process for hiring some of those sort of high-level jobs. Does it change at all, or you just follow the same process?
For me, yeah, I just follow the same process. The job tests that I do, I get interchanged a little bit. When I did my operations manager, I wanted him to better use Excel, so I gave him some Excel tests, and I just saw how he could do that. He wasn't very good on it to start with, so I just knew that it was something for us to work on, you know. So, for my estimator, he already knew Simpro, the guy that I hired, but the other guys, I showed them the process and showed them what we do. Just the questions, I tailored them. Only time I tailored the questions a little bit differently was the guy that I actually already had on staff, you know, because I really wanted to dig deeper with him, you know what I mean? So, but yeah, just follow exactly the same process.
Yeah. And if you are hiring for that operations manager or the estimator or office manager type person, the job tests are pretty easy to do. You don't have to have them on site, which can be a bit tricky sometimes. So definitely get them, like if you're hiring an estimator, get them to price some stuff. Now they might not understand your system, but you'll see, are they like, they show initiative, do they search stuff up? That's really powerful stuff that you can do.
Yeah, and when I got them to do the pricing part of it, I showed them where all the help files were, and I sort of just watched him and see how he didn't know how to do something, like how would he react to a problem, you know, like, so help files, Google, like what did he do, you know, that was...
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So Alex, Jason Carey, how are your companies structured currently, e.g. how many techs versus in the field versus office staff? Do you want to kick that one, Jason, off?
Yep. So we've got four in the office, including Kirsty.
Yep.
And then the rest is broken up between tradesmen and apprentices. So yeah. Yep. So
you've got nine on the tools, is that?
Nine on the tools, yep.
Or in the office. So in the office, there's Phil.
Phil does a lot of our estimating. He's just moving into a lot of servicing and the like now, but he's pretty much full time in the office.
Yeah.
Myself, I do a lot of estimating now as well. And then we've got, say, Paddy does a little bit, but he's moving more onto the tools, and then the rest of it is guys out there in the field and apprentices. Cool. Yeah.
Are you caring?
But yeah, so we've just moved another guy to take my role as the estimator now. So now I've got five people in the office, four tradesmen and three subcontractors. So we're pretty heavily office-based, but there's a lot of the projects we do are turnkey projects, you know, so they take a lot to manage other contractors.
Yep. And you have some reasonably large projects that have some solid margins as well, which kind of balances it out.
Yeah.
Cool. Okay. Who writes up your contracts, you or a legal person?
Definitely a legal
person. Legal person, yeah.
Yeah, we use Master Plumbers. We use their contract, so that's pretty
solid. A contract, buy a contract from someone. So from an HR person or a personnel person or one of the associations, trade associations, and make sure it's a contract that really suits you. It'll probably only cost you a couple of $100. It won't cost much.
We use Graham from that success.
Yep. Personnel. So if you're in NZ, you can get one from Graham.
Yeah, and the good thing about that is that I had a question about some training and a training agreement, and I flipped it off to them. They know our contract. They just did an amendment to the contract and then straight back.
I personally think anyone in business should have a relationship with a personnel or HR company. Don't necessarily use a lawyer. I mean, you can, but they're just way more expensive. And so if you ever need a question, you can just ask the person. Be careful of people like employer. Sure, I shouldn't say this, but you'll be on a monthly contract and you'll be paying when you don't need them. HR consultant, you'll pay them when you need them. Might be a little bit more that month, but overall it's way less.
Yeah.
And you get personal treatment. And they'll probably even come and sit with you if you need to take someone through performance management and help you with that.
Yeah. And Master Plumbers have HR, and she's just invaluable. Yeah, she's awesome.
Massive. Yeah. So good. All right, team. Hey, fantastic. Toby, can you please put a post on the Facebook page and just say best learnings from the hiring masters, please? Yeah, mate, that's cool, mate. So if you can post that up, best learnings from the hiring masters. We're all generals in training with hiring as well. We always learning. I really appreciate you guys today. It's been fantastic seeing you both come from basically no team to pretty substantial teams. Hats off to you guys. So good. It's been fun to watch, and I know there's more to come as well. And well done on the estimator, Kerry.
Yeah.
So team, what I'd love you to do is we'll finish up now. I'd love you to go to the Facebook page, please, and just put down what you found most helpful or most valuable from today's session. It'd be great to give Jason, Kerry some feedback. And I'd love to see as well. Great to share that stuff. So if you jump onto the members Facebook page, you do that now, there'll be a post going up there. Just put in what you found most helpful or most valuable. That would be fantastic. But thanks, team. Really appreciate you guys. It's cool to hang out. And, can't wait to see some more big wins from you guys and from everyone else as well.
Yep.
Remember, team, all the materials, all the templates, etc., are in the membership site to do this stuff. Take care, and we'll talk real soon.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah.
Yes. Cheers. Thanks, guys.
See ya.